we're good to go. Okay, everybody can see the screen. My screen share is looking a little funny. It's working. Get a thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Yes, it's good.
It's great. Excellent. Okay, fantastic. Okay, so welcome back, everyone. Excited to be learning a brand new topic. I've mentioned this either last week or a couple weeks ago that on the one hand, like every time I send out the subject or the title, it's Women's Hilchos Shabbos. It's never really Women's Hilchos Shabbos per se. It's Hilchos Shabbos. It's a group of women. But there's nothing per se about the actual halachas that we learn that are more slanted or inclined more towards women over men. Everybody's chayav in Shabbos. But here we have a topic that really is. It really is more inclined towards them. We spoke about challah and we spoke about hafreshas challah. So that's one of the mitzvos specifically pertaining to Shabbos that has more of a bent towards the female side of the coin. And here again, we have a similar topic in hadlakas neros Shabbos and Yom Tov. This is a mitzvah that is generally is fulfilled by women and less frequently by men. Although we'll see that everybody's actually chayav in hadlakas neros Shabbos. And with that introduction, let's just dive right in and get a sense of what the actual mitzvah is. What is the mitzvah of hadlakas neros? How do we go about doing it? How do we perform it? So let's take a look. This, by the way, is the very, very next chapter. So we're still in Chelek Beis of Shemir Shabbos. Old-fashioned edition here. Chelek, here we are. Chelek Beis, okay? So we started off with Perek Mem Beis, which is the halachas of Erev Shabbos, and we're just moving forward. This is Perek Mem Gimel Halachas Neiros Shabbos. Let's take a look. So first of all, mitzvah sahadlaka. What is the mitzvah of halachas Neiros Shabbos? Hadlakas Neiros Shabbos Yom Tov Hichova. This is an obligation. It's a must. It's not a nice thing we do. It's not a minhag. It's not, my family, this is something that we do. We light candles. And it's a good thing too. And it's a positive act. This is a mitzvah. This is not an obligation. This is a chova. The chova zu gedola kol kach. And actually, it's such a great and hefty obligation. Sha'afilu ani she'en lo ma yochal mishal atzmo. Even if an ani cannot afford food for himself, nevertheless, chayev ba. He is obligated to fulfill this mitzvah. That's not always the case. That's not always the case. Give me one moment. I got to make sure that I'm plugged in here. Sorry, that's run out of juice. But that is not always the case. It's not always the case that for every mitzvah, a person is obligated to ensure that even if he or she cannot otherwise afford it, that they put themselves in position to afford it. It's not always the case that a person has to go begging and knocking on doors in order to fulfill a mitzvah. That's not always the case. It's rarely the case, and it is the case here, which is interesting. Generally, usually, I guess most famously even, we find that this mandate, this obligation to make sure that you're able to fulfill this mitzvah. And let's just continue the sentence of who shol al psachim v'koneneir. If necessary, he needs to be shol al psachim, needs to go asking, begging from door to door, go knocking on doors in order to raise the necessary funds to acquire a candle, to acquire a ner. Shezeh bichlal oneg Shabbos, because this is included in oneg Shabbos. So I was going to say that most famously, when we speak about scenarios or mitzvos for which a person needs to go knocking on doors, it really pertains to pirsume nisa. We find that Chazal say this when it comes to arba kosos. Arba kosos at the Pesach Seder is because of pirsume nisa. We're trying to publicize and to highlight, at least for anybody who's around the table, that something really great and really extraordinary happened. It's something of a visual or, I don't know, gastronomic accessory to the actual Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. We make a point of raising a glass, and we have our l'chaim, and we have wine, and it's celebratory. And perhaps even more famously, for Chanukah, for Neros Chanukah. So Neros Chanukah is one of those mitzvos for which Chazal say that if necessary, a person needs to be mocher ksuso. He needs to sell the shirt off his back. He needs to be shoal al psachim, chozer al psachim. He needs to go from door to door, begging and collecting those funds to be able to have Neros Chanukah. And here we find the same for Neros Shabbos. So the idea is not that it's just a question of whenever you have to light a candle, but Chanukah has its thing and Shabbos has its thing. And maybe there is some overlap in a hashkafic capacity. But the issue when it comes to Chanukah is this same idea, presume nisa, that you're publicizing the nisa, you're publicizing a miracle, and we feel so strongly that that might actually have, it might touch directly upon the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem is something for which we need to forfeit everything. We need to give up our very lives for Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. one of the few. And therefore, a person certainly would need to give up all of his wealth and need to give up all of his time and all of his energy and all of his resources, ensuring that he can fulfill that mitzvah. When it comes to Shabbos, this is included in Oneg Shabbos, delighting in Shabbos and enjoying Shabbos. And in order to make sure that Shabbos is enjoyable, here we find another mitzvah for which a person must go to the nth degree to ensure that he has light for Shabbos. The any other maseges leknos ner leShabbos, the yayin lekiddush hayom, if a person does not have the resources available to provide a ner for Shabbos and wine for kiddush, ner Shabbos kodem. Then of those two, if you have just enough for one or the other, so then ner Shabbos kodem, ensuring that your Shabbos has light, is the most important, is the priority, singular. Spoken about that before. Takanas Chazalhi, and Takanas Chazal, the following Lahadlik Neros Shabbos, Oneg Shabbos, that we should light Neros Shabbos for Oneg Shabbos is a general rule. It's sort of counterintuitive. We don't find that when it comes to mitzvahs de'araisa, that they're taken so stringently and so strictly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly himself never demands that we go knocking on doors in order to fulfill a mitzvah. A person is at least not chayev to do so. If a person cannot afford a mitzvah, then he is considered to be in the category of anas rachmana patre, that it's he has no choice. He's forced into a position in which he cannot fulfill the mitzvah, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu exempts him, Torah exempts him, Halacha exempts him. When it comes to certain derabanans, derabanan were more machmir than HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, which sounds like it should be like an irreverent bumper sticker sold in Judaic stores or something, right? That the Chachamim were, you know, more machmir than God. Yeah. The joke of the great mashkiach, right? The great like kashrus mashkiach, right? Who goes up to Shemayim and they say, oh, we're so glad, Baruch Hashem, you know, after all these years, you had such a wonderful life. The fact is we've been awaiting your arrival and here you are, it's really you. And we've prepared such a fine seuda for you, and just step right inside the pearly gates and it'll be here, and you'll have all the waiters and butlers you could possibly imagine waiting on you to be able to provide you with all these delicacies and all these luxuries. It's going to be wonderful. And the mashgiach sort of, you know, sheepishly turns to the malach and says, I appreciate it. I appreciate everything. May I ask who is the Rav Hamachshir up here in Shemayim? Who exactly is giving the hashkacha to all the food that's going to be served at this banquet? And the malach turns back to him with shock, just stunned. His mouth is agape. He says, up here? Yevishter, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is the Rav Hamachshir. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the Rav Hamachshir. So this Rav looks back to the malach. He says, it's fine. I'll have fruit. It's sort of counterintuitive. The idea that the Chacham should be even more machmir than a Kaddish Baruch Hu is, but we find this in certain circumstances, in certain instances, that the Rabbanan might actually take their mitzvos to a further degree, maybe even than the D'oraisa. There are a variety of reasons for this. Kadesh Yochal Seudas La'oram, it's really, really critical that a person be able to eat his Seuda, which is how it's phrased here and framed here, that a person be able to eat his Seuda with proper lighting. There are really two different considerations when it comes to, and this is discussed a little bit in the footnotes. I don't know that he gets into this, especially in the actual Pnim, in the top portion, the upstairs of the Sefer. But really, there are two different considerations when it comes to lighting candles on Shabbos, Hadlakas Neris for Shabbos. Number one is what he's just mentioned, just articulated, the idea of Oneg Shabbos. And the Oneg Shabbos may well... There's machlokas rishonim about this as to how exactly you understand each one of these dimensions of Neir Shabbos and what it applies to. But at least broadly, there's a concept of oneg and there's a concept of kavod. Concept of oneg Shabbos is that we're delighting in Shabbos, we're enjoying Shabbos. The way that he's speaking about it here, and this is the case according to many, that oneg Shabbos is always going to be linked to actual physical enjoyment and therefore eating food. So if it's linked to Oneg, if it gives you the ability to see your food and to properly eat your food, so that's going to be considered to be Oneg Shabbos. There's another idea in that it creates certain ambiance, right? It's a hush of meal and it's a hush of day. There's something important. There's something special happening if you're making a point of lighting candles. You light candles for an important event. It creates a certain mood and a certain ambiance. You can usually tell a restaurant by the kind of lighting. Is there, even if it's battery powered, is there a little candle or a tea light inside of a something on the table? yes, when you get to some of the, you know, higher end, at least higher end-ish kinds of restaurants, and no, if you're talking about fast food, right? I don't think that at, you know, I don't know, Mike's Chicken, I'm not picking on Mike's Chicken, it's delicious, but I don't think they have like, you know, candles on the table. But you know, you got, you know, reserve cut or whatever, they most certainly would. So it says something. It's a statement. There's a minhag also to have candles at Malava Malka. We started doing this a while ago. It says something about what kind of sa'uda this is, that it's chashuv, that it's meaningful, that there's ambiance, that there's a certain atmosphere that you're trying to create. So that's the notion of kavod. What this means then for the rest of the house, what about all the other candles that we light, meaning all the other illumination that we create all throughout the house? So what exactly is that? Is that oneg? Is that kavod? Is that I'm trying to show that Shabbos is wonderful and Shabbos is meaningful, therefore my house is well lit? Or is this part of oneg, even though I'm not eating, let's say in the hallway, but still just the ability to not, sometimes it's also referred to as shalom. Shalom bias. Not shalom bias as in nobody's fighting, but literally you're not bumping into things. That things are calm and serene and the hazards have been removed because you can see where you're going. This is a very, very important stage. We should think, therefore, about halakas neiros Shabbos as being beyond just those candles that we light, but also largely, broadly, illumination. I mean, we should have kavana when we're illuminating our homes for Shabbos, that we're doing so for the sake of Kavod Shabbos. There is something to be said for actually starting the lights in an off position and then turning them on specifically for the sake of Shabbos. If they were on before, turn them off and turn them on for that purpose, for that sake. As you are turning on the kosher lamp, consider that this is for the purpose of whatever it is, whether it's Oneg Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos, but that there's some sort of actual fulfillment here in creating illumination. We'll see that this may actually be something that is a real direct fulfillment of the mitzvah, even though we might be using electric lighting. Okay, let's take a look at Beis. Yotzim Yedei, second, there we go. Yotzim Yedei Chova B'hadlakas Ner Echad Bilvad. Truth is, I fulfill the mitzvah even if I light but one candle. One candle is still a fulfillment of Hadlak. It's not Hadlakas Neros, but it's Hadlakas Ner. You still fulfill the mitzvah. However, having said that, aval mitzvah laharbos b'neros, there is a mitzvah to have abundant candles, to have many, many candles or many, many lights. There is such a mitzvah. Take a look at this. Interesting. It's like an in-between or footnote, right? The asterisk. Vamarba b'neros lo yadlik b'menora ba'alas shiva kanim ha'asuya mateches. It's amazing that we're starting to learn about Hilchas Chanukah now. In the morning, I've been posting it to the WhatsApp groups, daily Hilchas Chanukah, and there's a lot of overlap, concerns and considerations and manner in which we fulfill both of these mitzvos. A lot of overlap between the Hadlakas Neros Shabbos and the Hadlakas Neros Chanukah. One of the things that we try to be very cautious about is that we never use an item in our home that represents in any which way something that really only is meant to exist in the Beis HaMikdash. So we avoid using a candelabra, a leichter, that has seven branches, Ketavnis HaMenorah of the Beis HaMikdash, which was exactly, or even if not exactly, but it was akin to the menorah that was held in the Beis HaMikdash. Gam Mimein HaNeiros Omdim B'Shura Achas K'B'Menorah HaMikdash, even if the candles or the lights are not all in a neat row as they were in the Beis HaMikdash, Ela B'Me'agal V'Chadorma, even if it's circular or some other sort of pattern where the lights are in different positions, even so, Davka 7 should be avoided. V'Gam Imadlik B'Neiros V'Lo B'Shemen, and even though it's true that a person might be lighting, let's say, with candles and not actually with oil, if that's your minhag, which I think is pretty common here in America anyway, very common to see olive oil. We'll get to that in Eretz Yisrael. But even though it doesn't bear direct resemblance to the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, because after all, I'm using candles, and after all, it's more of a circular pattern still, we avoid using a leichter that has seven branches specifically. The minhag, though, back into the upstairs, the minhag is that we don't have any fewer than two candles. Echad keneged zachor ve'echad keneged shamor. We have one for zachor and one for shamor. Hadlakas neros, even though it's midrabanan, but hadlakas neros fits basically within zachor. This is one of the positive things that we do to remember, to actively remember Shabbos, to proclaim Shabbos. to actively say that Shabbos is special. Zachor is really about Kiddush, according to the Rambam, even D'oraisa, Midoraisa, it's about Havdalah also. The idea that at the tail end of Shabbos, we also say, you know, Shabbos was different from the upcoming week. Those are the Zachor mitzvos. Shamor is what we're usually more accustomed to thinking about when it comes to Shabbos, at least on a D'oraisa level, which are all the malachos. We refrain. Shamor is a don't do. Shamor is refrain from. Shamor is observe, keep, safeguard, refrain from all of the malachos of Shabbos. But at any rate, so this is the baseline. This is the baseline for the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neros. One is acceptable. One is the fulfillment of a mitzvah. If you find yourself in a position, you're trapped, you're stuck in a hotel someplace, and you only have one, should you even bother? If all you could rummage up was one tea light, should you even bother? Or after all, since Hadlakas Neros is really two, so then what's the point and why should you bother? You should absolutely bother. You should light the one. And moreover, you should also turn off the lights in the hotel room and then turn them back on, having kavana that this should be also for Hadlakas Neros Shabbos. Again, more on that in a little bit. Let's take a look at Gimel. Isha nohegas nahadlik mispar musyam shal neros Shabbos. A woman who has a custom to light a given number of candles on Shabbos, Eina, and we'll speak a bit how you arrive, perhaps, usually, typically, at that minhag, how many it is that you light. So Eina Risha Isla Fachos, she's not permitted to subtract from that number. She has to maintain that number week in, week out. Uvishas Hadchak, but if there's some sort of Shas Hadchak, what would be a Shas Hadchak? Shas Hadchak is a pressing, a time of pressing need. Something terrible took place. Kagon, for example, he says in the parentheses, if she will continue to abide by this custom of hers, she lights nine candles. So if she continues to do that this week, nebuch, nebuch, family's fallen on hard times. And if she continues to light nine candles, you know what that's going to mean? So you have to like rob from Peter to pay Paul. You can't just keep lighting all of those candles and still expect to be able to put food on the table. So what'll it be? Which one should you do? Lo aleinu. Titztarich letamtzim b'sha'ar hotza'os Shabbos. If I have to spend on the 9 or 10 candles, then I don't have that money to spend on the other things that I would usually furnish myself with for Shabbos. I'm not going to have for food. So in that case, you should not. You should not light that same number of candles. However, just to note how serious this is, ta'aseh hataras nedarim b'fnei shlosha. She should do hataras nedarim. Lighting extra candles is an extra mark of, at least of kavod, saying that I'm honoring Shabbos because I'm lighting more candles, maybe even oneg Shabbos. Right, again, if you're able to see better and you're able to enjoy the food more, you're in an atmosphere and in a space that's properly lit. Generally speaking, especially Bizman HaZen, when we have overhead electric lighting, the candles aren't necessarily adding that much to the Oneg Shabbos, and it's there. We accomplish Oneg Shabbos by through the overhead lighting. But at any rate, this is really serious. This is really serious. If you light 10 candles for Kavod Shabbos, then that needs to be maintained. And if for whatever reason you can't, so don't. But Hataras Nedarim is certainly in order. Similarly, let's say a woman makes a point of specifically lighting large candles. Let's say you go all out, or let's say you've gone all out for, let's say, a number of weeks in a row, where you get the real elegant, you know, tapers, right? Scented candles, big, beautiful ones. You buy them from, I don't know, Yankee Candle or, I don't know, wherever the Olam gets their, you know, tapers. Anyway, so you do that. You do the really large ones, or you go the route of the vials with either olive oil or other kind of liquid fuel and, you know, usually fill it up or whatever. Then al tishanem min hagal hadlik ketanim mehem below hatara. So then, without hataras nedarim, you can't back up. You can't back off from that minhag. If you're including more fuel, then you can't take it down a notch without performing hataras nedarim. If you're always lighting those larger candles, you have to stick to the larger candles. Remember that the larger candles, the larger lights, mean more oil for longer, means more light for longer, which means more kavod, which means potentially more oneg. So b'med dvar mamurim. When is this said? When does this apply? Kasher hi madlika bebesa. This is all when she is lighting at home. Aval kasheinu shavesas bebesa. But if she's not spending Shabbos in her own home, Aminagu, the custom then is Shana Madlika El Shnei Neris Bolvad. Then she only lights two candles. Lavdavka Gedolim, and they also don't even have to be as large. You don't have to make your host crazy. You know, I usually at home, I only need two. Usually at home, I get, you know, these really elegant, you know, foot long tapers, pumpkin spice scented. Do you have such a thing? Would you mind running out quickly before I know Shabbos in 15 minutes? Would you mind if you? So that we don't do. That we don't do. So they also don't have to be as large as she's accustomed to doing in her own home. And if a woman decides that she wants to take on extra candles, that's something that she wants to do. So she shouldn't do so without getting the go-ahead from her husband. This should be a joint decision, how many extra candles to light. I don't know that he mentions it here. I think this is a pretty standard, typical minug. There may be other reasons for tacking on an extra candle. But one of the reasons is that typically you start with two and then you add one per child. That's a very traditional practice. So that might be something that, you know, there's just this understanding that that's what's going to happen. But if there's some other reason, you know, I want to add a candle for such and such. I want to add a candle for a refuah shleima for this person. I want to add a candle for, you know, hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring Yeshua to, you know, that family and or Eretz Yisrael or whatever it is. So that should really be a joint decision. I don't know that this necessarily plays in, but it is interesting, as I mentioned, that sometimes the way that this Oneg Shabbos component is referred to is Shalom Bayis. Shalom Bayis in this capacity means that you're safe. You're safe and secure in your home. You're not bumping into things. You're not bumping into furniture. You can see the food on your plate. You're not jabbing your fork, you know, into your bottom lip. You can see what's happening. You can see what's going on. But it's an interesting thing to note that it's referred to as Shalom Bayis, which obviously has larger connotations colloquially. When we speak about Shalom Bayis, it means people getting along, or family members getting along, husband and wife getting along. So it should be a joint decision. It is a mitzvah. We know this again. Overlap with Neris Chanukah. It is mitzvah min amuvchar to seek out shemen zayis. Seek out shemen zayis. You know, chata'ai or chata'inu ani mazker hayom. We use wax candles, I think, like many. We're makpid to use shemen zayis for Neris Chanukah. I don't know. Maybe we should make a switch. It's much more of an avoda, of course, to use shemen zayis because there's, you know, there's filling and there are wicks and you got to put them in and it's a whole thing and it's a whole setup. And how long does it take to do it for Neris Chanukah? So to do that every week for Neris Shabbos. At any rate, we use wax candles, but there is something to be said, mitzvah min amuvchar, to mimic what was being done in the Beis HaMikdash is a very chashuv thing. Just an interesting note about Truma and Kohanim here. Kohen v'ishto rishayim lehadlik be'erev Shabbos v'erev Yom Tov b'shemen zayis shel Truma Tameya. That even though a Kohen is not really permitted to eat Truma Tameya, Truma has to be tahor, it has to remain in a pure state. If it's unpure, if it's impure, then he's not permitted to eat it, but it may be burned. He may burn if you had oil that was Truma and it became Tameya somehow became ritually impure, he still may use it for Neris Shabbos. Of a lo yadliku bo neris, I'm sorry. Lo yadliku bo neris Shabbos kishchal yom tov be'erev Shabbos. It's a little technical. But if yontif falls in erev Shabbos, then you shouldn't use it. B'chein lo yadliku b'yom tov b'shemen shel truma tmeya emhei madlikim b'layla. Halavai, we should go back to these issues. Some technical points here about how this actually unfolds and whatever. There are some considerations there. I don't really get into, but. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to just think about what would happen with Truma. Now we take Truma, even when we're mafresh Truma, and it just gets deposited and basically gets thrown out. But one day soon, Mirtz Hashem will return to all these considerations with Truma and how you use it, how you go about doing so. So let's say a person doesn't have olive oil. Let's say olive oil is not in the cards. Then Yadlik, sorry, this is a little, it's a flagel here. Yadlik v'sha'ar minei Shemen Sha'orim Tzalol, then use something else, use some other fuel that produces a clear, pure light, which wax absolutely does. Wax or paraffin, beeswax, all these things, typical fuels that we use for candles, certainly fits the bill. It produces a very clear and clean light. V'yaseh psilos mitzemer gefen. What should you make the wicks of? The wicks should be cotton wicks, o mechomer achersha, or ne'echos bo yafeh. Or use any wick that allows the or, that allows the actual flame, the actual fire, to take well, and it burns well, and it burns clearly. It absorbs the fuel very easily. So that's what we should be on the lookout for. If you're buying candles, obviously it comes pre-installed with a wick. The wicks that we usually buy, let's say at least for Hanukkah, I believe are always cotton wicks. They certainly did not use cotton wicks in the Beis HaMikdash. We were talking about this morning. You're using linen wicks, I believe linen. Often they were made from the leftover remnants of the garments of the Kohanim. But today we use cotton. Cotton is the most, it produces the most beautiful flame. Natalie, yeah.
Hi, I had a question regarding candles and adding lights. Is that not a minhag that just goes from mother to daughter? Like, can someone just add, let's say their mother lit two candles. Can they then decide to add more candles?
That's a good question. Right, that's a good question. It seems so. I'd want to research that a little bit more to tell you for sure, but it seems so, because I don't know that that's a breach of the minhag. Insofar as there is this notion of adding candles to be able to just create more light, meaning I don't know that anyone can claim that my minhag is to light two, but not three. My minhag is to light two, but not 10. My minhag was just to light two. That's all we did. We only did two. Okay. So I fulfill your minhag. I see your minhag and I raise you two more, three more, or four more. I believe that that's the case. I'd want to look around a little bit more, but I think that's the case. There are certain minhagim that, do you stand or do you sit for Kiddush, right? So that's like a zero-sum game. That's an either-or proposition. You're either doing one or the other, and you should follow your minhag. But example, right? If my father always used a becher that held 3.5 ounces, 3.5 ounces, like Rav Moshe Feinstein. Okay. I want to be machmer for the Chazon Ish, and I want a 5.1 ounce becher. I want a becher that holds 6 ounces, and I'm going to down all 6 ounces. So is that keneged my father's minhag? Is that against my father's minhag? It's my father's minhag plus, right? I'm seeing your minhag. I'm abiding by that minhag. I'm maintaining that minhag, and I'm also doing something else. I'm also doing more. It's when you talk about quantitative measures, it's difficult to assert that this is our minhag and no more. Having said that, in terms of when you start lighting, that's something else. I'll give you an example. There are certain minhagim that my wife's family had that were like Chabad minhagim. I don't know that they were real hard and fast minhagim necessarily, but my father-in-law especially became from through Chabad. So he wears a Chabad talis, certain things in Til Sedaim, they always did like Chabad. So therefore, I think Chabad starts Lachas Neiros either at Bas Mitzvah or even earlier, maybe at like three, right? They do Hadla, they start with Lachas Neiros Shabbos at a very, very young age. We'll talk about this as a possible minhag. So my wife wanted to know, I think with Aliza, like, should we do that? I think when she was younger, she lit candles. And we asked our rabbi, he said, no, that is a Chabad minhag, but that's a Chabad minhag. That's not really, meaning you're not going that way. That's not your husband's minhag. That's not what you should do. So there was like a more clearly defined sort of line in the sand. When do you start? But again, in terms of quantity, sheer quantity, so what do you lose if you add? I once asked, when we were first married, I asked a Rav that I was very close with in Queens, in Kew Gardens Hills, about saying certain tefillos. So my parents didn't say these tefillos as part of like the Shabbos Suda, not just Zemiros. Maybe that's a good example, right? My father always sang Sur Mishalo, Zehu. Sur Mishalo, that's it. That's the only one he's saying. So it's not my minhag to sing my yedidus. It's not my minhag to sing kol makadish. It's not my minhag to sing menucha v'simcha. It's not your minhag. Okay, so I see your minhag, and I'm doing more. I believe that that should be the case here. I'd want to look around a little bit more to ensure that that's really true. But I believe that that's the case. If it's just hypothetical, then I guess we can leave it there. But if not, just if you want to follow up, I'll look around a little bit more. But I believe that to be the case when it comes to something like Neris Shabbos, where adding is always considered to be a maila, again, within reason. At some point, it just, it becomes difficult to handle. And remember that you also then that's your new number, right? That's your new number. You take on one for, one for every kid, or you take on 10, or you take on for this tzara and that tzara, and it should be zechos for refuah shleim for so-and-so, and you're doing that for the rest of your life. So you want to be, you want to be cautious. But generally, largely, taking on extra candles seems to be a nice thing.
What if it's the opposite?
Meaning to drop, like, to do fewer?
Yeah, like let's say my grandmother did 2, but my mother did more. And let's say I, for whatever reason, I like the 2 candles.
Right.
I don't necessarily think adding more candles would add to my oneg Shabbos. I actually like the simplicity of the 2 candlesticks. Is there any issue with that?
If it's something like, this is what my mother did because this is what she did because she thought it was kind of cool and kind of fun, but it's not necessarily my family's minhag, right, to make a point of doing that. So then, okay, so then it's something that she did, but that's not necessarily something that's really your family, that's really your family minhag. But I'm trying to think.
The minhag has to start somewhere. Like if I were to continue it and then my kids did and then like, okay, then it's a minhag. But if it's like one generation.
Right. So that's what I was going to say. I mean, it happens to be, I think my mother-in-law does the same, but I'm thinking, so we light. So Sarah lights 2 plus 1 for each child, Kanai Nahara. So like if one of my daughters want to say, nah, like I'm not going to do that. Like, I don't feel like doing that. I don't know. That I think has more of the real force of a real minhag. But if it's something that, in a particular generation, one person decided that they were going to take on, I don't know that that has the full force of, a minhag, really. One of the other complexities here, when it comes to Neir Shabbos, is that it's something that generally falls to the woman of the house, but it's a family consideration, right? Usually minhagim track the husband. So something like hadlakas neiros, like I don't know that these things tend to become a conversation because what is the husband? I don't like neiros, whatever your mother did. I don't know if that's so.
We actually had that. My mother only lights 2. My mother-in-law lit 1 per child, and I was very freaked out by the idea of lighting 1 per child. I had this fear that one of them is going to blow out, and it was going to be this sign. So Avi and I discussed it before we got married, and he said, yeah, I certainly have no opinion on the matter, so do whatever your mother did.
Yeah. And had there been a generation, so like Natalie, in the case that you're talking about, I don't know if this is, theoretical or actual, but like, in that situation where one of those links in the chain decides that, I like the idea of lighting more candles. Okay, that's good. I don't know that that carries, the full force of, of a real like family minhag that you're no longer permitted to, to choose one way or the other, right? If it was something that clearly was in your family for generations, but I have something between, I think it's more than a mishagas, but like I will never, I only wash for pizza. I only wash for pizza because I just don't hear this whole thing of mizonos. I haven't understand it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I've looked into it. I've done my best to wrap my head around it, and I can't make peace with it. So, is that my minhag? I don't know if that's my minhag. I think like that's the kind of thing that one day, I don't know, you know, like one day Yosef is telling his kid, yeah, my father, Zadie never, he always washes for pizza. It's against the post can say you can make a mizonosana on one slice of pizza. I don't know. Is it, you know, like, I'm not sure what that everything that we take on necessarily becomes or at all becomes, you know, minhag that every subsequent generation must keep. But when you have a clear family minhag, then that's something else. Certainly in your case, if you can piece this together and say, look, quite clearly, my grandmother, she did something else. She did too. My mother, she decided that she wanted to do more. Okay, I wanna just do the basic. I wanna do our basic minhag that seems to be our family's minhag. And I wanna keep that. I wanna abide by that. You know, that seems like a very reasonable approach. Yeah, there's no, and again, you know, yes, people get, you know, freaked out about different things or they're meaningful, you know, on different levels. So, you know, that's all fair. If it is very clear, you know, well-established family minhag, I would say, you know, don't switch it, don't change it. But if not.
Can I ask a question about oil versus candles?
Yeah.
So I switched to oil, a few years after we were married, because we were experiencing infertility and we were told that could, you know, that could be a school or whatever. So I light oil. But I wondered when we're away, it's sometimes inconvenient to use oil. Right. So we always like try to bring along, do I have to do that? Or can I light candles if it's inconvenient on a particular week?
I think if you're it sounds like if you're traveling, basically whatever minhagim you usually keep at home and whatever you usually abide by, also in terms of shir, hidurim, in terms of the number of chule, that doesn't really apply. I would say it is worth hedging your bets, particularly if you usually do when you travel. If usually, even when you travel, you use oil, so then you should do Hataras Nadarim for it. You should do Hataras Nadarim. Get three people together, three men together that you're not related to, and just the practice I took on. At the time that I took it on, I wasn't sure that what it meant in terms of travel or not, but now I'm finding that it's very, very inconvenient, and had I known how inconvenient it would be when I first started doing it, I really wouldn't have done it, and just express that.
Right.
Mutfilach, and it's okay. It is a wonderful thing to do and to take on, you know, when at home, and that's a great story. It's a great story of a segula gone right, Baruch Hashem. But it sounds like,
and then we have our Shiluach HaKain story that led to Tzipora a year later.
Oh wow, that's great!
That is our Tzipora. That is the bird name.
Beautiful. So do you have a yes. Mayor? Do you have a mayor in the era?
No.
Wow, that's beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Wow.
Sarah and Amalki twins.
Ah, Zachar and Shama.
Okay, there we go.
Beautiful. Wow, that's great. That's great. Awesome. So yeah, but that's what it seems like. It sounds like when you travel,
okay, yeah.
Additional hidurim you keep in your home, that is for your home. And when you travel, you can
Right. Okay. But in my situation, since I've been doing that,
it almost becomes its own quasi-nether.
Okay. Thank you.
But it doesn't have to be the whole full text, but specifically, it actually shouldn't be. It's much more effective if you just articulate that particular practice that you're speaking about. Explain why you wouldn't have taken it on in the first place had you known how complicated it would have ultimately become, and you can revert. That's an example.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Amadik Neiru Shabbos Yom Tov. Let's pick up in this paragraph. Amadik Neiru Shabbos Yom Tov Nurot Chashmal. Okay, so this is wild. Right? We don't usually think along these lines. We usually like poo poo these things. And come on, that's like for the that's for people who aren't from. That's for the reform movement. Right. What about lighting Neir Shabbos with electric bulbs? Right. What about electric candles? Yesh lo amilismoch. Yeah, that's acceptable. Says Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Vagam, here's the kicker. Yavarech al hadlakazu. You can even make a bracha on that hadlaka. Now this is talking about incandescent bulbs, which might be kind of difficult to come by now. Everything is is LED. but even potentially to make a bracha on it. And they actually sell these. Some of the like the Bikur Cholim organizations put these in their kits that they deliver to the hospitals. Obviously, if you're in a hospital room, they are not going to let you. Maybe it's different in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know. I don't think so. I think they just have these, you know, at the ready. But certainly you cannot light a match in a hospital room. That would not be, it's just not a good idea. At least I don't think it's a good idea. Which is got a question. Okay. So one second. So Vagambi Varakab Lakazu Lovashiabik Lichvod Shabbos. You should also as long as this was being done for the sake of Kavod Shabbos, not just like you happen to do it and it's there and it's already there and then you make a bracha afterwards. But Mavik, and we'll talk about that. If a person lights with Shemen Zayas or any other oil, that glass vial that is holding the oil, I do this with my nearest Hanukkah, it is mutter before Shabbos to put water in the bottom so that the oil floats to the top. It means that the wick then, it just, without explaining this, if you've ever set up your candles this way, you'll know the advantage in doing this. It means that the wick is not then burning into the interior of the vial and covering the vial with soot. It means you have a greater ability to keep the wick suspended above, or keep it placed above the tip of the wick, placed above the top of the glass. It works much better this way. Aval b'Shabbos atzma, but on Shabbos itself, aser la'asos kein, you're not allowed to do that. Amadlik b'neros shava o b'neros paraffin. If a person is using either wax or paraffin candles, then lo ya'amidem. Oh, by the way, so what's the problem with doing that on Shabbos? The issue with doing that on Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch talks about this. The issue with doing that on Shabbos is that pouring the water in and thereby raising up the oil is that anything that now drips from the candle is going to be extinguished that much more quickly. Oil is one of these remarkable properties of oil, that oil's not flammable, right? It's an amazing, just an amazing thing. And I get a kick out of this, right? That if you soak a wick in oil, or you set up a wick to draw from oil, so the wick will burn and burn and burn until the oil is completely consumed. If you have a fire and you dump some oil, it's not flammable. That'll douse the flames. The water will go out, right? As opposed to, you know, kerosene, gasoline. It's an amazing thing. It's a remarkable quality. So when it comes to raising the oil up higher, closer to the point of the actual flame, all of the little embers that drop from the top of the flame now will be extinguished that much more quickly because the oil was raised up to the top. That is a problem to do that on Shabbos itself. If you have candles, don't leave them too close to one another. Try to have them spread apart from each other. They're going to warm each other up. Which is going to make the fuel, the paraffin or the wax of the candle, it's not only going to melt from the flame at the top of the candle, it'll also melt from all those candles on the side. It'll go out more quickly. We want it to last. We want it to last. It should last for as long as for as long as possible. Certainly into, you know, well into the Seuda. So the question. So Natalie's question, should a person continue doing the segula after they've received what it is they were doing the segula for? Sort of depends on the nature of the segula, meaning, right, Rifki, the situation that you're talking about, you're accepting something, you're taking on a new standard, and taking on that standard, you should continue to abide by that standard. Could you potentially do Hataras Nedarim on that? You could. I wouldn't recommend that, right? You took something on and a Kaddish Baruch Hu smiled, you know, upon you for having done so. You should continue to do that. And also you accepted this as a new standard or as a new practice. As compared to, I'm going to go to the Kosel every night for 40 days, right? The 40-day tefillah segula. So I'm going to go every night for Ma'ariv for 40 days to daven at the Kosel for a particular tzorech, for a particular whatever it is that I need. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers me. So am I now beholden to davening at the Kosel, you know, davening Ma'ariv at the Kosel every day for the rest of my life? I don't think so. But that's not like a new standard that I've taken on. That was something that I did for a period of time. But it's not like raising the bar of a particular mitzvah that I'm performing. So it sort of depends on the nature of the segula, and what it is and what it is that you're doing. But those are the good segulas. Those are the good segulas. I mean, I hate to say it, like those are the good segulas. The good segulas are the segulas that are a little more challenging, a little more difficult, but that you're raising the bar on your mitzvos. I mean, there's this beautiful mida keneged mida of Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'm sort of asking for you to go beyond your comfort zone, right? You're kivyachol. You want to provide me with X. I'm asking for X plus one. What I'm going to bring to the table is that really the standard is X, and I'm going to give you X plus one. I'm gonna raise it up a notch. I'm going to give more. I'm going to dig deeper. I'm going to give more of myself. I'm going to spend more time preparing. I'm going to spend more. I'm going to spend more time. I'm going to spend more money. I'm going to spend more energy. And then you've raised the bar of your platform of mitzvos. That's a beautiful thing to continue to maintain and to abide by. But it depends on the nature of it. It may depend also on just how, again, like how difficult it is, right? Somebody, I'm gonna go to the Ari's mikvah every day, right? Every day, and then because I wanna shudder. I don't know if that's a thing, right? And then I meet the girl, like you. So if you have to keep going to the mikvah every day, it's not. I mean, I'm not a chassid. I don't really do that. It's not really my thing. I was doing it for a particular period of time, and that's kind of the context in which I took it on, and the framework within which I took it on. I think it's a different reality. Let's do one more here, because I think this says a lot about, there's a lot to discuss in terms of what the halacha actually says, and also at least a point to be made for what's not included in this halacha. So Isha Shishtakha V'Hidlika Nera Shabbos. Person, a woman who forgets to do Hadlakas Neros 1 week, running around, I'm surprised this doesn't happen more frequently. Running around, there's a lot going on Erev Shabbos, and you forget to light Erev Shabbos. The Gambayla lo hidlik or bebayis lechod Shabbos, and it's not just that she forgets; her husband doesn't realize either, and that's it. There are no Shabbos candles in the house. Tosif mikanul haba. From there on, she needs to light an extra candle. Ner echad al ela shenahaga lehadlik. Adko, however many she had lit until that point, she should now do plus one forever. She should now do plus one. The imshakka kamet pa'amim, and if she's forgotten many times, tosif ner echad al kol pa'am sheshakka, every time she should add another one. There might be something Kabbalistic here, the way that it's spoken, the way that he explains this in the notes with this Brala Halacha, is that this is something of like an institutionalized knas, a slap on the wrist or a penalty, that this will keep you in check, right? This will dissuade you from forgetting. If you have a problem with forgetting Erev Shabbos, if every time you forget, you now have to continue to light another one, so then hopefully you remember in the future to light Erev Shabbos. Vishani Yashe Shakha. Now, what happens if a woman can't really afford all these extra candles and yet she forgot? Dai la v'meshet tarbem mashehu al shir haner. She can add a little extra. It's hard to add extra wax, but if she's using a liquid fuel, she adds a little bit more. Shaisa regilaba from whatever she ordinarily would do, and she adds a little bit more, and that can qualify as that extra candle. So you get slightly larger candles instead of used to do tea lights, and now you get the longer candles. And then if you go for the longer candles, you get the extra long candles. And the extra long candles, you get tapers or whatever. But medvar mamurim. So when does it supply? Kishishakka, when she forgot. Let's say she didn't light because she was in the hospital. Or let's say she was dealing with a kid in the hospital, a sick kid. I don't have time. Like I'm not going to leave your bedside right now in order to go home and light Erev Shabbos. We're just not doing Erev Shabbos. I have my priorities straight. Good for her. And that's why she didn't get the opportunity to light. So she doesn't have to add on an extra light in that case. So this says a lot. First of all, this is really significant. This is pretty harsh. If you forget to light 1 week, you should really tack on another light that you continue to include in your repertoire of Erev Shabbos. That is the halacha. There is a custom, a minhag, a concern that if a candle blows out, then prematurely, then you add on an additional one. I remember there's a Rav that I would often eat with in Key Gardens Hill, and his Rebbetzin had like a table full of candles. And I remember like once he asked me why so many, like we knew how many kids, like it doesn't kind of hurt. I got a lot of kids, but something's not adding up. So one blows out and I had another one. And then at some point I had another extra one. There's a, you know, like a lot of, candles that blow out and whatever. Some might have that minog. That's not strict. That's not strict halacha. Rifki made this point before, but I just, and I don't mean to be dismissive of it in any which way. And I get the sentiment and I get the, but for anybody who does not think along those lines, like it's okay. It's okay. The candle is not your child. That's something that freaks you out. And therefore that's a reason why you want to just continue lighting through, fine. But if you don't light to, and if you light more, and if you light 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever it is, and one of them goes out, you know, there's no requirement to look upon that as any sort of ayin hara or simin ra. These things happen in life. Lots of things happen in life, and you don't need to read additional meaning into them than necessary. Couple of questions here. Should a person continue doing this? Oh, I'm sorry. An extra candle is lit for a specified amount of time or always. This becomes the new minhag. This becomes the new Kabbalah. Right? I do this forever. So if I used to light three candles, something goes out. Now I light, not something goes out. I'm sorry. I forgot to light Neris Shabbos one week. Now I do four. And then 20 years later, I forget to light Neris Shabbos one week. Now I do five. 95. That's really halakha. These other things, there are minhagim. There are minhagim about just out of this extra concern and cautiousness, this one went out, so now I want to make a point of lighting another one and bringing more light and etc. But my point is only that if you don't think along those lines, don't make yourself crazy. Don't believe that you have to think along those lines. But if those are the lines that you think along, and therefore that was a part of the decision making to light too, as opposed to lighting many more. So by all means, that's all fair. We all operate on different wavelengths. We view more or less meaning, you know, in all these kinds of instances and occurrences. Okay, let's hold it here. Mirtz Hashem, next time we're going to get into a startling truth that men are chayav in hadlakas neiros Shabbos as well. That'll be for next time. Thanks everybody for hopping on. Looking forward to continuing this very, very interesting topic together. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you.
Question. Thank you.
Yeah, question?
So I use the liquid and, you know, it always burns 3 hours plus whatever, but it comes the winter months like now, right. I pour more in for it lasting longer. Should I always do the same amount all year round?
I don't think so. If it's seasonal and you do that with purpose and intentionally, you know, some seasons more than others, then that's what you've accepted. That's what you've decided to adopt.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Okay. Kol tov, everyone.
Okay, good night. Thank you.
Be well.